This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Allison Stewart. President Obama's 88-page regulatory reform plan has raised questions from both the public and politicians. We went to the White House campus yesterday to get some answers from Jared Bernstein, chief economist and economic policy advisor to Vice President Biden, and an architect of the plan.
Thank you very much for letting us drop in on you in your office.
My pleasure.
You have a reputation for being a fairly progressive person, especially compared to some of the more centrist folks in the current administration. So I'm curious what you think is the strongest part of this plan.
I've got to say that there are two parts of the plan that strike me as strongest. One is the ability of regulators now to provide what's called systemic oversight, which really means that we will endow regulators with the ability to deal with the failure of large financial institutions that can really bring down the whole system.
Those ones that are too big to fail?
Correct. Okay. I think of them as too interconnected to fail. If they were just big all unto themselves, big deal. They could come down, actually create a lot of pain, but that pain wouldn't reverberate throughout the system the way we've seen it. The second really big and important part of this is the consumer Financial Protection Agency. Having an agency that can successfully protect consumers from abuses is another critical piece of this.
One part of the plan which has gotten a lot of attention, both positive and negative, and from both parties, is some of the increased power that's being discussed for the Federal Reserve. Tim Geithner described the new role as a first responder. He got a lot of pushback from the committee, the Senate Banking Committee. Why should we give the Fed more power when they've made some pretty big mistakes?
I understand that criticism, but I think the problem with that view is that it doesn't allow for a more dynamic learning process at the Federal Reserve. You know, the Federal Reserve isn't just this big old brick building over there on Constitution Avenue. It's filled with people. And Ben Bernanke is not Alan Greenspan. And in fact, I'd even say Alan Greenspan is not Alan Greenspan in the sense that as this problem developed, Greenspan and some of the regulators who were in place basically believed that markets would be self-correcting. The former chairman, to his credit himself, has said that was a mistake, essentially, that to believe these markets would somehow fix themselves without the kind of oversight and regulation that we're proposing with these new plans was clearly wrong. And I would argue that Ben Bernanke really gets that. So I think folks have to understand that these institutions can and, in fact, must grow with changes that occur in the economy.
If the president's plan were to make it through Congress with little or no change, can you give me an example of one effect we would see immediately for the average person and then one long-term effect?
I think an immediate effect would come from the consumer protection piece of this. In the current regime, someone out there looking for a home loan might have been able to go out there and fill out a form that absolutely failed to represent their credit worthiness. If their salary was inadequate to the loan that they were taking out, in the old regime, they would have gotten it anyway. With this agency in place, consumers will be protected from getting into situations like that that are not only very destructive for them, but also when you have a whole bunch of consumers getting involved in those risks pose a systemic risk to the whole system. Over the longer term, the way we've regulated commercial banks, the bank on the corner, the deposit institutions in your neighborhood, those have actually been well regulated and generally very safe institutions that are not part of the systemic risk. But in fact, there are lots of other lending institutions. They're called non-bank lenders. They're these, it's a mortgage broker, it's an investment bank, it's the former Lehman or AIG was another example of the. They're doing a ton of borrowing and lending themselves because they've been so unregulated. And because they had such high leverage ratios, meaning that they simply didn't have the capital to support all the borrowing that they were doing, they were the ones that posed the most risk to the system. And over the longer term now, they're going to get basically the same kind of regulation that the commercial bank on the corner gets.
Where do the smaller banks fall under this proposal?
I think for many of the small banks in the country, the locus of oversight doesn't change much. And it's interesting. The FDIC has, in many ways, undergone some of this kind of regulatory reform over the years and works pretty well. They will continue to oversee and regulate the smaller banks that they've always worked with. We think that that will continue to be a successful arrangement. That's less of the problem than the very large banks and lending institutions that have heretofore been unregulated.
Why not have the FDIC oversee everyone?
I think the FDIC works well in what it does. It's structured to insure deposits of commercial banks, of the banks that are chartered by the states and the ones we see in towns across America. If those banks run into trouble, the FDIC has a long history of knowing how to help them. They've never been quite set up to deal with a different type of systemic risk that the much larger institutions that are so interconnected, even globally, can engender in the system. However, it's instructive. Many of the rules that the FDIC applies to smaller banks are rules that we are now applying to the larger lending institutions. Rules about how much capital you have to have on hand, rules about how leveraged you can be, and rules about who can come in and check your exposure to the markets and help maintain a level of risk that's not so dangerous to the system.
Mr. Bernstein, thank you for taking the time today.
My pleasure.